This work was done with Chris Hemming, who's now at UBC doing a postdoc. So let me first describe what type of phenomena we're interested in. Do I have this turned on? Can you hear me? Yeah, it's on. I'm going to be talking about spatial pattern formation in resonantly forced reaction diffusion systems. This is a picture from some experimental work done by the Swinney group. You also see Ehud Meron as one of the authors of one of the papers. So what you should imagine is a spatially distributed reaction diffusion system. This is the Belousov-Zabotinsky reaction. It's in the oscillatory regime. And now you force it with, it's a light-sensitive version of the reaction, and you force it with light. You periodically illuminate it. And just like for a nonlinear oscillator, you can have the system lock into resonances. But because the system is spatially distributed, the phenomena are much more complex. And this is an example of some of the things that you can see. So the simplest phenomenon is to simply lock the system in phase with the driving forcing, one-to-one resonance. And in this case, the system simply is oscillating homogeneously, as you can tell from these two colors. These are two different times. Another prominent pattern is a two-to-one resonance. And in this case, you can see that the system locks into, again, domains. And these two domains, black and white, are shifted by one period, or pi. And as time evolves, you can see white goes into black, and white and black into white, and vice versa. So if you look stroboscopically, you have a front, and across that front, there's a shift of pi of the phase. This is an example of a 3-to-1 pattern, and in fact, this 3-to-1 pattern is the one that I'm going to focus on in the rest of this talk today, although many of the phenomena that I'll describe also occur in this case, and in fact also in the 4-to-1 resonance. So rather than deal with a specific reaction diffusion equation in this area, it's customary to work with a reduced equation, an amplitude equation, and near the Hopf bifurcation point, for a periodically forced, a resonantly forced system, the complex Ginzburg-Landau equation takes this form. This is the equation that you've seen many times in this conference. The only difference is this term, where A bar is the complex conjugate of the complex amplitude field. And if you are dealing with an N to M resonance, then the power of this is N minus 1. And the factor gamma is proportional to the strength of the driving that you're applying to the system. So this is basically viewing the dynamics in Poincaré planes that are taken at times delta t 2n pi over omega f, where omega f is the driving frequency. And if you want to relate this complex amplitude field to the concentrations in your reaction diffusion equation, it's through the usual relation of this type, where u is the eigenvalue, eigenfunction of the linearized eigenvalue problem, and omega f is the driving frequency. So everything that I'm going to talk about concerns this equation. So this is a blow-up of the last bit of the experimental data that I showed you. And I'm going to be talking, as I said before, in the rest of this talk about this 3-to-1 resonance regime. So let me just mention a few things about it. It's 3-to-1 resonance, so the local domains that you see here are shifted by 2 pi over 3, and they stroboscopically go into each other as time evolves. So you can see that white goes into black, black goes into gray, and gray goes into white cyclically in the system, or sometimes it'll be green going to blue to red later on. Again, the important thing is that there are these homogeneous domains where the system is locked to the driving frequency, and these domain walls separate these domains where the phase is shifted by 2 pi over 3. And I want to really talk about the main purpose of this talk is to discuss the nature of these interfaces in various regimes. So let me start with a very simple situation. Just consider a one-dimensional Ginzburg-Landau equation. And let's suppose that the unforced system is in the Benjamin-Fierce stable regime. We again heard about this condition several times before in this conference. Then, unforced system. Then I want to imagine for parameters where this is true for the unforced system, I now add forcing, a small amount of forcing, and even with the forcing, the ODE has three stable fixed points. They're indicated here in the phase plane. And traveling 1D front solutions exist. So this is a plot of either the real, a plot of the real and a plot of the imaginary part of the complex amplitude field versus space. And this is a traveling front solution connecting these two stable fixed points for the ODE. And there are analogous fronts connecting the other two phases. So they're just simple traveling fronts. And what is also true, that if you take the unforced system in the Benjamin-Fierre unstable regime, where now the ordinary complex Ginzburg-Landau equation would show phase turbulence, and you apply sufficiently large forcing, then the forcing suppresses the turbulence, and in fact, you see exactly the same structure for this case. So again, even in the Benjamin-Fierre unstable regime for the unforced system, for sufficiently strong, sufficiently large forcing, you have simple propagating fronts in the system. Okay, so now what I want to imagine doing is to now lower the amplitude of the forcing. I'm still always in the Benjamin-Fierre unstable regime for the unforced system. And the first thing that happens is the front begins to oscillate. It's traveling, but it begins to oscillate. Its position begins to oscillate. And there's a characteristic parameter value at which that bifurcation occurs to an oscillating front. So this is a plot of the velocity of the front versus the strength of the forcing. And for high forcing, the velocity increases parabolically. At the bifurcation point, you have a sudden change in the velocity, and again, it varies parabolically. So the velocity goes as gamma critical minus gamma to the 1/2, in fact, on both sides of the bifurcation. And the period diverges as gamma critical minus gamma to the minus 1/2 at the bifurcation point. So this is the first type of bifurcation you see in this system. If you continue to lower the forcing on the system, a very complicated series of bifurcations actually takes place. But what I want to point out is that if you go to sufficiently small forcing amplitudes, the front itself actually becomes unstable. So this is an example where you had a front separating the green and blue phases. This front is traveling, say, left to right. And for this particular value of gamma, you can see that nucleation of the third phase, the red phase, occurs right in the interfacial zone and ultimately spreads and fills the system. So this is the first example of a front explosion in the system. You go from a simple traveling front to a front where you have all of this structure occurring in the interface. For even lower values of gamma, the structure is much more pronounced, and you end up with these chaotic phases emerging directly from the interface. The upper picture is the plot of the amplitude, and the lower part is the phase of this complex amplitude field. So again, initially the front was moving left to right, and then this interface became unstable. There, in the presence of forcing or absence of forcing? In the presence of forcing, the uniform states are stable. Yes. These are simulations. The only experiments were the first picture and then the 3-to-1. These are all numerics, yes. In fact, I won't show any experiments anymore. Okay, so this was just an introduction. The main part of the talk is actually to study the transverse stabilities of these fronts and the internal structure for higher dimensional systems. So I want to spend quite a lot of time discussing what happens in two dimensions. So the scenario is exactly the same. From now on, I'm always going to be dealing with the case where I'm in the Benjamin-Fier unstable regime for the unforced system. And you should always remember three phases, and I'm only showing two of them. So the system is resonantly locked into green, blue, and red, and I'm setting up an interface between any two of those phases, in this case green and blue, and I'm looking stroboscopically at the dynamics. So if I looked at intermediate times, I would see these flashing cyclically red, green, blue. But looking stroboscopically, I see these as fixed homogeneous phases, and I have a front that's propagating left to right in the system. So these are three snapshots of the front at three different times for the system. And what you can see is that in this regime, for this particular value of the forcing, you have a rather benign front, but yet one that has small roughness and dynamics associated with the interface. If you decrease the forcing amplitude a bit more, then dramatic things begin to happen. And in particular, the front develops this very turbulent structure. So again, these are three snapshots taken at widely spaced time intervals. This interface is propagating left to right here, but yet the structure of the interface is nothing like the smooth interface that you saw earlier for the case where you had a smooth profile connecting these two phases. Instead, you have this very complex dynamics occurring in the front, and in addition, the interfacial profile is itself very rough. And here you're looking at just a small portion of a very big system. So this is the type of behavior that you observe in this system. To quantify that a little bit, you can, what I've plotted here is the intrinsic width of the interface versus time, the average intrinsic width. So coming back to this picture, along any horizontal line, the width of the interface is measured from left to right, and then averaged over y. So that quantity is plotted versus time, and what you can see is that, take the lower curve, which corresponds to this particular parameter value, you see it fluctuates about some fixed average value, so it's statistically stationary. For a somewhat lower value of gamma, the average interface width has grown and the fluctuations are much more pronounced, but it's still statistically stationary if you run this for very long times. So there is some average interface width with fluctuations in this system. So now one can try to characterize the interface. And I have to be a little bit careful here. What I want to characterize now is the profile. There are going to be various widths appearing in this talk, and I just want to talk about the profile of this front. I can either do it on the right or on the left. And so introducing this notation that H denotes the position of the interface, and H bar its average value, averaged over Y, then it turns out that the fronts that I just showed you can actually be described by the Carter-Parisi-Zhang equation. So this is an equation for a diffusively rough interface, and the interface width is defined in this way, just the average, in this case my y is x, average over x of the deviation of the of h from its average value squared, whole thing to the 1/2 power. And yes. Okay. Yes. Right. So this is exactly right. I'll come to that case later. These are what I call confined fronts. So these do not grow linearly in time. They have a saturated average width, which is given by, say, this value, the average of this value. And even though the front fluctuates dramatically, it propagates with a fixed average velocity and fixed average width for these parameters. So it's not like the case I showed you before. No, I can't derive it. What I'm asserting is that if I attempt to model the front profile by this equation correctly describes the front width, the scaling of the front width. So I'll be a little more precise. This is the definition of the interface width as a function of time. If I now calculate this quantity using the Carter-Parisi-Zhang equation, I obtain the results shown here. So a front satisfying Carter-Parisi-Zhang dynamics satisfies this scaling relation for the average front width. So averaged over all realizations of the front starting from a planar front. So if I take the average front width divided by the length of the interface, the height of the interface, raised to some power alpha, this should be a universal function of the time divided by the length of the interface raised to the alpha over beta. And KPZ predicts that alpha is 1/2 and beta is 1/3. And if I take the simulation data for the front that I just showed you, and I plot it in scaled coordinates using the KPZ exponents, I get data collapse. And so there are three sets of data shown for three different system sizes, 200, 400, and 500. And this confirms that the interface width can be modeled by KPZ dynamics. So what it's saying is that this front in this deterministic system where the interface dynamics is very chaotic, in fact I'll show you it's chaotic in a moment, that this deterministic chaos plays the same role as the noise term in this equation to drive the roughness of this interface. But it's not derived from the dynamics. Okay, so these fronts are rather different from the fronts we're used to dealing with in reaction diffusion equations where the fields vary smoothly across the front and we can construct various amplitude equations for the front profile. Instead, we have this very turbulent phase sitting between two homogeneous phases. So it's much better to actually try to analyze the dynamics of this system as a turbulent phase confined between two homogeneous phases. So the notation that I'll be using from now on is that you can really describe this traveling front as a combination of a right profile, which connects the homogeneous phase to the turbulent phase, a left profile that connects the other homogeneous phase to the turbulent phase, and a turbulent zone that has some intrinsic width delta. You can see the intrinsic width varies as I move along y, but on average it has a fixed value. So this is the picture that one wants to use to try to analyze the structure of the turbulent phase. Now, just to give you an idea about what the dynamics is like in this intervening region, if you look at the complex amplitude field, either along these dotted lines that define the profiles, or along a line through the middle of the turbulent zone, what you find is the following. So, if you look at the boundaries of the turbulent zone, you find that the complex amplitude field forms these three points in the real and imaginary A-plane. So what this means is there's actually phase coherence. The phase coherence is preserved for these three. You have three noisy fixed points separated by 2 pi over 3. If you look through the center, you see a blob of points. It looks like phase coherence is lost. This is a blow-up of that center region. Unfortunately, you can't see it here, but even though the points are scattered, if you compute the centers of mass of those three points, of the three types of points, the crosses, the circles, and the squares, the centers of mass are actually distinct. So, on average, phase coherence is still preserved in this system. You can see that a little more dramatically if you just average over the entire interfacial zone and plot the average value of A in the interfacial zone, you have phase coherence. That has to be so because you have one phase to the left, another phase to the right, and an interface connecting them. If there were no phase coherence, the system couldn't hold together. So there has to be a remnant of phase coherence in the system. Okay, so now we come to the issue that you brought up. If I tune gamma even smaller, I reach a critical value of gamma that I call gamma star, where the turbulent phase is no longer confined between the two homogeneous phases. So there's a critical value of gamma where the interface begins to explode. At that critical value of gamma, the turbulent phase begins eating the two homogeneous phases. So these are this is a picture of the interface at two different times, and you can see that the interface is growing, and in fact it grows linearly. So at this point, if I wait long enough, this turbulent phase fills the entire domain. So this is the front explosion. This is the two-dimensional analog of the front explosion that you saw in 1D. So the other point I want to make, I already pointed out that when this turbulent phase is confined, the profile satisfies the KPZ equation. It's also true that in this domain where the turbulent phase is eating the homogeneous phases, these profiles also satisfy the KPZ equation. Just a quick remark on the nature of that turbulent phase. If I look at the turbulent phase that's formed after the front explosion, you can compute the largest Lyapunov exponent. It's positive, so it really is deterministic chaos, and it's characterized by rapid decay of spatial and temporal correlations in the system. System size is about 800. Correlations decay rapidly and rapidly in time as well. So it has all the features of a true turbulent state. Okay, so now I want to take a diversion from the complex Ginzburg-Landau equation for a little while and try to study a simpler model to try to gain some insight into what's happening in the system. So in these resonantly forced systems, the main physical ingredient is the breaking of the time translation symmetry by the external periodic forcing of the system. So Another system that has that characteristic broken time translation symmetry is a coupled map model. So if I consider a discrete time system, and I arrange the dynamics of the local map to be periodic, in this case period 3, and I take a series of such local nonlinear maps and couple them on a lattice, I have this array of coupled maps, and epsilon gauges the coupling, the nearest neighbor diffusive coupling. And a very simple version of the map will do. I could take a piecewise linear map and just arrange this slope so that I have period 3. So now I have a system with local period 3 dynamics and coupling. This map has one other nice feature. Because of this flat portion, all of the orbits are super stable, and so you actually collapse onto the orbit in 3 steps, and so you can actually define exactly the position of the interface, whereas in the complex Ginzburg-Landau equation, you have to use some threshold criterion for defining the interface. So in any event, the question is, does this system show similar behavior? It does, and this is a picture of what the dynamics looks like for this system. So again, I'm showing you an interface separating 2 of the 3 fixed points in the system. Again, the system cycles, so I'm looking stroboscopically every 3rd iterative map. And what you can see is this turbulent phase that separates the 2 homogeneous phases. And again, this interface is moving left to right in the system. It's a traveling front. It turns out that the coupled map lattice interfaces satisfy a slightly simpler equation, the Edwards-Wilkinson equation. The nonlinear term is missing. In general, it should satisfy the KPZ equation as for the earlier interfaces, but one can estimate the system size where the nonlinear term should become important, and it's around 17,000, and this picture is 4,000, so we've got a long way to go. So, in fact, the equation is linear for the front profile in this case. But nonetheless, this scaling of the interface width is given by a simple stochastic model. And just as for the complex Ginzburg-Landau equation, if you tune the coupling, you find a regime where the front explodes. So these are 3 different times shown here, and you can see that the interface is growing and will ultimately fill the entire domain. In fact, I'm giving you this presentation anti-historically. We actually discovered this first, and it took us a while to actually find the phenomenon in a PDE for the Ginzburg-Landau equation, but it exists. So let me just mention a couple of other things that help in the analysis of this phenomenon. This is the same picture I showed you in the previous slide with the turbulent interfacial zone separating these 2 homogeneous phases. If you take an initial condition where you have 2 homogeneous phases separated by a domain of the turbulent phase with some given width, then you can ask how that initial condition evolves in time. So this is a picture of the average width that you see starting from such initial conditions. So in this case, the average width that I started with was 200 lattice units, a wide wedge of the turbulent phase separating 2 homogeneous phases. And what you can see is that the domain shrinks, the turbulent phase shrinks linearly, and then finally it reaches a stable asymptotic average value. So this is the stable phase. Similarly, I could start at a smaller value and it shrinks with the same velocity. So the net result of that is that if you start with a large domain of the turbulent phase separated by 2 homogeneous phases, the black homogeneous phase will eat the turbulent phase, so it has a velocity that's negative. And this gray phase will also eat the turbulent phase. It has a velocity that's positive. This is in the regime where the turbulent interface is stable. So the idea then is the following. This is the picture of the interface. In this coupled map model, each of these profiles, the left profile and the right profile, satisfy the Edwards-Wilkinson equation if they were by themselves. Say with just turbulent phase to the left, then the right profile would satisfy the Edwards-Wilkinson equation, and similarly for the right profile. So for the right profile, I have an Edwards-Wilkinson equation in blue, but note the negative sign of the velocity because the interface is moving left to right. For the left profile, I also have an Edwards-Wilkinson equation, but I have a positive velocity because the interface is moving left to right. But for the stable interface, the stable propagating interface shown here, something must stop them from actually collapsing because I have some remnant of the turbulent phase. So phenomenologically, we add a force that depends upon the distance between the interfaces that stops the collapse. So this is just a phenomenological model of what the mechanism of the formation of this stable propagating front is. So it's two coupled profiles connected by a force that prevents the collapse. So from those two coupled equations, I can get equations for the intrinsic width just by subtracting, or for the mean profile by adding. And because of the linearity of this Edwards-Wilkinson model, the equation for the intrinsic width, delta, is actually closed. So I have a single closed stochastic differential equation for the intrinsic width. The equation for the mean profile is coupled to the intrinsic width. And this velocity u is just twice v, the velocity of the propagating fronts and of the two independent fronts. Okay, so on the basis of this equation, one can now attempt to do a scaling theory. So we can introduce scale variables, a characteristic thickness, a characteristic time, and a characteristic length. It turns out that the velocity scales like the distance from bifurcation. So we can make a scaling ansatz that the intrinsic width scales like the distance from bifurcation to some parameter alpha, the length to some exponent beta, and the time to some exponent z. And if we assume that the force scales with some exponent eta, or eta times alpha, then the scaled equation, simple scaling of that equation, allows me to determine the exponents. The only condition is that I have to have eta bigger than 3, and in this limit, the force scales to 0 in the scaling limit, which is actually consistent with the simulations that the front doesn't collapse. So under these fairly general conditions, we have explicit expressions for the exponents. And in particular, solving these equations gives, in two dimensions, alpha equals 1/3, beta equals 2/3, and z equals 4/3. And in red are the results of simulations. So you see the alpha exponent is in good agreement with that scaling prediction, so is beta. Z we didn't attempt to measure. It's actually tough to measure these exponents, even for this simple model. And the results are consistent with this, but the errors are too big to report. So this simple phenomenological model at least seems to capture some of the features of this process. So now let me, in view of this, now let me return to the complex Ginzburg-Landau equation. And the question is, do we observe the same scaling structure for the Ginzburg-Landau equation? So this is a plot of the front velocity versus the forcing amplitude, and it goes to zero linearly. with the distance from bifurcation, just as one saw for the coupled map model. And the intrinsic width also scales like a power law, 1 over alpha. However, the exponent is 0.47, not 1/3. So although the qualitative features are the same in both of these cases, the scaling exponents are different in these cases. And I'll say a bit more about this later, why I think this is so. But it's clear that there's a difference between these two predictions for the scaling structure. Now, there's one other interesting feature that comes out of this analysis of the simple map model. If you, from the scaling analysis that I gave you before in arbitrary dimensions, d, then the exponent alpha is 2 minus d divided by 2 plus d. So that you can see that d equals 2 is a critical dimension for this problem. And so it's interesting then to attempt to study the nature of the fronts in three-dimensional systems where you have a two-dimensional front separating the two homogeneous phases in the system. So this is a picture of a simulation of a three-dimensional coupled map lattice model, the same one I showed you before. And what you see here is a rough front separating two homogeneous phases, one for large z, the other one for small z. And I've just shown two cross-sections through this front, one along here and the other one through there. And you can see the structure that's similar to the structure you saw in the two-dimensional case that I showed you before. If you tune the coupling, you again find a front explosion. And this is an example of an exploding front. This is moving up, and this is moving down. And this is the turbulent zone that's growing between these two interfacial profiles. So now one should analyze the scaling structure of this front, and you see something quite different. So what I've plotted on this graph is the intrinsic width versus the distance from bifurcation. This upper curve is just a replotting of the results of the two-dimensional system. So a d equals one front for two different system sizes, and you see the power law behavior that I talked about before. At a critical value, the front explodes, and it explodes like a power law. The lower points are the results of the three-dimensional simulations. So a d equals two front. And in particular, take a look at the black circles. It's just the width as a function of the parameter. The open circles are actually transients, long-time transients. So right here, the system explodes suddenly. It looks like a first-order transition. So again, in accord with the fact that d equals 2 is a critical dimension, we indeed do see a different structure for the different scaling structure for the front explosion. Just to show you what's going on in this transient region signaled by these open circles. Oof, okay. What you see is the intrinsic width remains constant. Those are the open circles that I plotted here, the value in this plateau region here. But after some time, and this is a rather long time, 10 to the fifth iterations of the system, it all of a sudden explodes, and the width begins growing linearly. At the same time this explosion occurs, the position of the front, it was traveling, so its position was changing. It stops traveling and it's flat. For the complex Ginzburg-Landau equation now returning to the complex Ginzburg-Landau equation, what's plotted here are the results for 2D and 3D complex Ginzburg-Landau simulation. So this is the two-dimensional result that I showed you before. Has exponent alpha equals 0.49. But now, for the complex Ginzburg-Landau equation, we again find a power law instead of a first-order transition, but with a different exponent, 0.33. So there are a number of puzzling results in this picture. The phenomenology is the same, namely that you have a front explosion at a critical value, but the critical properties seem to be rather different. Did that 5 minutes include questions? Okay. So then you can read the conclusions yourself, and I'll wait for questions.